Center of the best sound in Caribbean radio. This is VOC Radio.
Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis, a talk show and current affairs program focusing on St. Kitts and Nevis, the Caribbean, and international news. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, join host Andre Huey as he delves into topical issues of the day. We'll open the lines so you can call in and be part of the discussion. And he'll feature guests each week to help shed light on the various topics of discussion. Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis with Andre Huey, Tuesdays at 10 a.m., with rebroadcasts on Wednesdays and Fridays, also at 10 a.m., on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Also listen on our Android mobile app and TuneIn Radio. Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
Welcome to Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis, right here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. I'm your host, Andre Huey. On today's edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis, we review the elections of St. Kitts and Nevis on August 5th. The snap elections that were called back in July due to the fall of the Team Unity Coalition government led to the election of the St. Kitts and Nevis Labour Party back into office, winning 6 of the 8 seats on St. Kitts, 6 of the 11 seats in the National Assembly. We had an exclusive interview from our sister media entity, SKN Newsline, truly had the opportunity to speak with the Prime Minister, the first interview the Prime Minister did since being sworn in as Prime Minister Dr. Terence Drew. We hear from him now. This was done before the swearing-in ceremony of the Cabinet, which took place on Saturday. So, we'll give you that full interview with Dr. Terence Drew, the Prime Minister of St. Kitts and Nevis, his first interview since becoming the Prime Minister. And then in the second half of the show, we'll hear from Hartley Henry, a Caribbean political strategist. He was interviewed by The Narrative, a TV show out of Grenada on WPG 10 TV, where he spoke about the St. Kitts and Nevis elections, offering his assessment on the Labour Party's victory and the eventual loss of the People's Labour Party and the People's Action Movement. All that on today's edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis. But first, we'll take a break and be right back.
Voice of the Caribbean Radio, VOC Radio. Stay locked on.
It's the new and improved SKN Newsline Android mobile app. With the SKN Newsline app, you can watch your news reports, the SKN Newsline newscast, sports, special features, and so much more. You can also send us a WhatsApp or call us directly. Go in the Google Play Store, search SKN Newsline, and download the app today. The SKN Newsline mobile app. News on the go.
Online radio has never been this great. It's Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Tune into Voice of the Caribbean Radio for great Caribbean programs, news, entertainment, sports, and current affairs. Wake up each morning and be inspired with One Day at a Time with Kim Huey. Stay abreast with news across the Caribbean and internationally with the Caribbean News Hour and be entertained with shows like Reggaeville, Caribbean Classics, and Jive Music Show. Visit our website, download our Android mobile app, or listen us on TuneIn Radio. There is so much more on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond. Check website or app for program schedule.
Want to buy some fresh fruits, vegetables, or ground provision, but don't have the time to go to the market or even to find parking? Look no further. Green Market and Delivery is your solution. Green Market and Delivery is an e-commerce store that sells and delivers local produce to customers in St. Kitts and Nevis. Anything you purchase, you can get fresh from the market and delivered directly to your door. Log on to www.greenmarketskn.com. Click on the e-store link, choose your items, and shop away. We have a wide array of products from fruits, vegetables, local products, spices and seasonings, and much more. Save time and energy. Shop on greenmarketskn.com, your one-stop shop for fresh local produce.
Stay abreast with news on St. Martin with SMN News. Visit www.smn-news.com for up-to-date news, scoops, opinions, and hard-hitting facts. SMN News, we tell it like it is. Visit our website, smn-news.com.
If you're looking for a place to host that special event, conference, meeting, social event, party, whatever the occasion, your best option is the Millhouse Convention Center in Palmetto Point, St. Kitts. Located on the picturesque Garvey's Estate, the Millhouse Guesthouse Convention Center has enough space for outdoor events overlooking the Caribbean Sea. If you're looking indoors, the center is equipped with amenities needed to make your event a success. And by combining both spaces, you're sure to have a memorable event, no matter the occasion. Call the offices at Millhouse Guesthouse and Convention Center to book your next event on simply the most beautiful place in St. Kitts. Call 668-1392. Millhouse Convention Center at Garvey's Estate, Palmetto Point, St. Kitts. Making your event memorable.
Auto Plus Car Wash, located on the Collins Street Gut, Bastia, St. Kitts. Bring your car to Auto Plus Car Wash to remove water stains, wiper marks. Get your doors, roof panel cleaned, seat floor mats, buff in, headlights, and engine wash. You get quality service at the best price at Auto Plus Car Wash. They really care for your car. Call 765-5140 or visit them on the Collins Street Gut, Bastia, St. Kitts. Auto Plus Car Wash, where the service is number one.
The voice of the Caribbean Radio.
Welcome back to Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis, right here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio. I'm Andre Hume. Well, as I indicated, we have the interview, an exclusive interview that was done on SKN Newsline, our sister media entity, done by yours truly, speaking to Prime Minister Dr. Terence Drew, his first interview since being sworn in as Prime Minister. This interview was done on Tuesday, August 9th.
Well, first of all, Prime Minister, congratulations on your election victory.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it.
First of all, before we get into the meat of the matter, the Labour Party is back in power after 7 years in opposition. Why do you think the voters voted overwhelmingly for the party this time around?
I think the party presented a certain sense of newness. It presented stability. It presented unity within its structure. And when we look on the other side, we recognize that they had disintegrated and people had lost trust in them. And so I also would know that the program that the St. Kitts Nevis Labour Party presented, the seven pillars, that had a tremendous impact. But we had a team that we called the A-Team, and people saw our team as a very competent team that was suitable to lead our country forward. And therefore, I think that those were the significant factors that contributed to us getting back where we are today.
Now, you're at this stage now where this is your first day in office. How was it, first of all? I see you had a lot of meetings today, actually.
Well, you know, it's a day, I would say, the experience has been interesting. You know, it is, of course, a job that is challenging, but I'm up to the challenge. I had a lot of meetings today, meeting with critical people to get up to date with what is, you know, going on in the country. And not only that, there are a number of things that we would have promised the people to get done in the first week. And I have been working on them, and I have made tremendous progress on those things. So I just want the people to know that my first day has been a day of work.
Could you give us some insight into some of those things that you...
Well, for example, with respect to the MRI, I told them that would be one of the first things that I will do. Also, the lifting of the ban with respect to COVID and traveling, I have also dealt with that.
So as it stands right now, with the restrictions, the travel restrictions that are in place, they are no longer in place?
Lifted, I've ordered that they be lifted. They'll be lifted very quickly.
So
yes.
Sometime this week we should get an announcement.
Yes, right. And they would be lifted. And I met with the task force, and I'm happy to report that based on the scientific data, we can do it. So we are doing it safely as well. I also said that the children who needed medical care and whose parents couldn't afford it, that is one of the issues that I brought to the Ministry of Finance, and that one I will also pursue vigorously. And we also looking at what we'll do with the students. So those things that we have promised I've always said that they had been looked at by our economic team, so they were never pie in the skies, in the sky type of things. They were real things that could be done. And I'm happy to report that we are pursuing them with a great deal of success.
Right. On your first week, obviously, of course, your cabinet will have to be sworn in, and I take that's going to happen sometime soon as well. If you could speak to some effect.
Our cabinet will be sworn in on Saturday at 4 p.m. at Warner Park. You know, we are inviting the whole country to come out and see that inauguration when our ministers would be named at 4 p.m. And their various ministries would be given out as well. And so it'll be an exciting day, and we're inviting a number of persons to be present with us. So yes, Saturday is that big day.
No hint as to who will be getting what portfolios, because we've seen some circulations going around.
That is not reflective of what I have planned. But I can clearly say that people know Dr. Geoffrey Hanley would be the Minister of Education. I'll give away that one.
All right, okay. And Minister of Health, I know you've been campaigning on health a lot.
Well, very likely. I can also say that I will take health. Yes.
Now, Dr. Drew, one of the challenges for a new government is the transition process. How will your government approach the transition process to ensure that, one, it happens smoothly, and two, we normally hear accusations of victimization every time a government changes. Can we expect that there will be a smooth transition from your standpoint, and that the accusations that we normally hear around this time may not be a case in your government?
So from my perspective, we will have a smooth transition. And the reason why I say that is that my first act was really with dealing with the former prime minister. As I've said before, I have nothing personal against him. Everything I said was fear and factual in the campaign. And I was asked about his security and his vehicle. And I've said to the Commissioner of Police that he should be left with a vehicle and he should be given security. I am not interested in what the former Prime Minister did with the Prime Minister before him. I criticized what he did and said it was wrong. And so now I am in the position, I have the opportunity to set a new paradigm, and that I have done. And I've extended that courtesy to him. And I'm also inviting him to the inauguration. He's a former head of state, and I think he deserves to be invited as well. A number of other critical things is for me to get in. I want to say at this point, I'm very pleased with our supporters. They have heeded our call. They have not ransacked the government headquarters. As a matter of fact, when we came here, they did not even breach the gate to come upstairs on Saturday. And this morning they came and they were very respectful to the institution and to those who work here. And that to me is already setting a new paradigm. And it's important for us as well, because we run a campaign on decency. And I think I want to pursue that. I mean, I came to my office, I met the secretary who was here, and you know, she's extended that level of decency as well. I would like to say that in any government, there are a number of political positions. Any country you go to, people know that these are political positions. And those who are in the political positions, they would know, okay, when that administration goes, that I really should go with that administration. Those are the political positions. So outside of the political positions, we have no intention of really disrespecting people or victimizing people, right? And so that is where we are. We know that a number of things would have taking place that I'm not so pleased about, those I would say later on. But in terms of victimizing people because of their political position, that is not something that I wish to practice, not from the Prime Minister level, come all the way down. We need a different approach here in St. Kitts and Nevis. We said we'll be different, and I have started different, and I continue to be different and try to be as different in a positive way to move the country forward.
How would you deal with the challenge of senior civil servants and civil servants now? Now, we're not talking about political positions, right, but civil servants who have been openly political, they're supporters of the other parties, and they are in prominent positions within government. And there is sometimes the fear that some of these persons may do things to sabotage, for lack of a better word, the government. How do you intend to deal with that without it coming across as being a victimization situation?
I think that there are people in a number of critical positions, and the question of sabotage is always a question. And I think that that has to be looked at as well. I'm not going to be naive and not think that there are those who don't want me to succeed, who don't want Labour to succeed, who don't want our administration to succeed. I have to be aware of that as well. So I'm keeping, you know, very open that that can be a possibility. And where we find that, we will have to make sure that we protect the administration, protect the agenda, protect the reason why people send us here in the first place. So we will not be naive to those type of things. And I will encourage people that you have a new administration to work with the administration to make sure that the agenda of the people, is fulfilled. That is why we are sent in.
Right. Let's go back now to some of the things that you promised that you intend to fulfill, that your government would fulfill. Quite a number of them are quite ambitious, if for lack of a better term, and they will also require a good bit of capital investment. The question is, how do you intend to fund some of these, and what are the priority areas? Apart from the ones you've listed already, what are some of the priority areas that you're hoping to get off for the first 100 days?
Right. So we have mentioned a couple of things. Those that I talked about, because when we deal with the travel ban, that's going to open up the country, and that's going to bring people in, and they're going to, of course, attract revenue. Revenue is going to come in. As far as the healthcare system is concerned, as I told you, what we are going to do with the MRI and the children and so forth. Those are priority areas. But we're also going to look at a number of areas, because we had a number of things that we promised in the first 100 days. We want to deal with the cost of living. Cost of living is a critical issue in terms of the cost of food. That is going to be a priority area. The cost of fuel, that is also going to be a priority area, so that we can immediately start to deal with the cost of living of our people here in St. Kitts and Nevis. We have to deal with that. It is critical that we do that. Just recently, we see the United States, I think they passed a law to limit inflation, or to, you know, in a sense, to deal with the cost of living. We had been speaking about that even before, and therefore, those will be our priority areas. How can we help our people by decreasing the cost of living, dealing with those other critical issues? And the other thing we're going to look at is to get our people back to work. So, based on scientific data, the vaccine issue will no longer be an issue. People will be able to act more freely. We'll open up the country so that tourism and travel can again be back on a path to be, you know, open up fully. And therefore, that we know would really help significantly. And then we are pursuing a number of investment opportunities that I will announce soon after. So with getting people back to work and dealing with the cost of living, dealing with aspect of health and education and so forth, which are all priority areas, I think we can quickly start to get our country back on track so that in the next few months, we'll have a better economic outlook, which I'm sure would be able to be achieved. Despite there are some challenges around the world, I think we'll be innovative enough. And the fact that I really think that in the year coming, next year, and in speaking with persons in the financial world and so forth, we can expect an improvement in certain aspect of our economy.
Right. Some of the benefits that you spoke about, for example, reducing inflation or trying as best to control inflation so that the cost of living is not high for especially the vulnerable communities. Generally, when measures are put in place to do that, people sometimes don't get the full benefit of it, because if, for example, you say you're looking to subsidize cost of food, the supermarkets tend to still jack up the prices on the foods, and it still becomes even more expensive than before the measures were put in place. How confident or how much can you assure people that when you do have these measures, that the proper price control will put in mechanisms will be put in place to ensure that the people who need to benefit from it benefit?
Right. One of the things they said is that we'll have price control, and there is legislation for it. The mechanisms that I know are there already. We need to enforce those things. And we are going to be very serious about that. We are intending to, just as you have the price of what a gallon of gas is called, we have to put something in place for those items that we'll put on the list that we'll consider essential items and subsidize, so that people can know, well, a pound of sugar is not supposed to be cost. It's not supposed to cost above this. Cost above this. Why is this costing that?
And this will be across the board, all the supermarkets and all the major.
It'll be operators. A national thing, so that people can know the range. So that is what we are looking at to implement. So even if you don't have enough persons going out, people themselves can take a look and look at the cost and say, look, you know, this shouldn't be. This will not be at. Will not cost the supermarkets, you know, owners and so forth, the business people, anything. This is something that the government will subsidize. Just that when the cost come down, that saving will be passed on to our citizens. That is what we are aiming for.
Right. We're going to come back to matters of economy, but I'm going to shift over to other national matters. Nevis. We have a situation now where the island, Nevis Island Administration is led by the Premier, Mark Brantley, who previously was a part of the previous federal administration. He has talked about fair share for Nevis. In fact, that was one of the major planks that led to the election that we just came out of. How does a Dr. Terence Drew administration intend to engage Nevis and to ensure that the issues that they've had with the previous government, that those issues will be resolved?
Right. Let me say that I've communicated with the Premier of Nevis. I've also communicated with the leader of the NRP. And I've said to the Premier, as I've said, remember what I said in when I was sworn in, I mentioned the issue of Nevis. I said that that issue, it needs to be resolved. And I am very, very, I'm taking that very seriously. And I will sit with the Premier of Nevis, and we have to find a way to hammer out the tough issues of CBI revenues, the tough issues that deal with aspects of the Constitution that really need to be dealt with so that we can have a better relationship, so that these matters, they don't raise their head again. And I've said, I know they had what you call a Charlestown Accord, but then we see that, you know, people want to, you know, respecting it, saying that it's not worth anything. So anything we do has to be done in a legislative framework that would have the strength to survive. And therefore, that is how I think we have to move. But I'm committed to resolving these issues. And where there are inequities or where there are any sense of mistreatment and not be given a fair share, we have to deal with those type of issues. So we have to deal with it fairly so that Sinkits feels satisfied and Nevis feels satisfied.
So when it comes to revenue sharing, for example, the Constitution has a provision for tax revenue. The CBI revenues, however, that's where the crux of the matter is. So you're saying essentially that legislation would have to be put in place to determine an agreeable ratio of sharing revenue.
Yes, we sit down, we agree to something, and we put the legislation in place and make sure that people come out of it feeling comfortable about Sinkits and Nevis, so that there is no discrepancy. And I'm willing to do that. And it's not just on this CBI alone, but any other issue that might be causing any difficulty in our relationship.
What about budgetary support? Because that is something that Nevis heavily depended on. That was something they were getting from the previous government. But again, it wasn't set in a legislative agenda or a legislative way. How do you intend to approach that in the interim while you're working out the differences?
Right. So while we're working out the differences, I think they have to. But one must understand that the federal government would have to have an approach to really make sure that the Federation is in good stead. But I think the budgetary support, where support is needed, whether it's Sinkits or Nevis, that should be had. But again, that can be resolved by sitting down and making sure that whatever agreements are reached, that there are fair agreements for both islands.
How did you... And coming back to the economy, the COVID-19 pandemic, obviously, and you made references to the travel restrictions and, of course, the job situation. What's your view of how the previous administration handled that as it relates to the economy? And what are some of the pitfalls that you're looking to avoid based on how that was done?
Right. So I think in terms of the restrictions, I think there should have been more consultation. I will tell you this, that the task force had recommended some easing of the restrictions since May of this year, and they were not implemented by the government. That to me is a travesty, because they have a body with doctors there who look at the science and would have made recommendations, and to say that those recommendations sat there and were not pursued. That is why I kept saying that there was no scientific basis to keep the country locked down. It was a political decision that was taken. And that political decision has had tremendous economic ramifications. So quickly, we are going to put those in place. So I'm simply saying that if we have good scientific information, let us act on that information. I think remains the last country in the English-speaking Caribbean, at least, that has not opened up. And it is not because we lack the persons with the scientific knowledge to advise the government. It is because the government did not implement the recommendation that was made.
Right. The state of the economy generally, though, and I know you talked about opening up the economy. How do you see the state of the economy now, right now as we speak?
Well, presently I'm having discussions with the Ministry of Finance and the banks and so forth. And then at some time I'll have a good assessment to, you know, of what the true state is. So I'm still going through that process. So I wouldn't speak prematurely.
Let's talk about CBI quickly. Citizenship by Investment Program, it is one of our major income earners. And there is a school of thought in the public that a lot of the plans that have been outlined by the government are actually going to be funded by the CBI. How does your administration plan to approach the CBI managing it? What are some of the issues you see with the CBI program that you hope to address?
Right. So I will speak broadly. I'm still meeting, because you know, this is my first day. So I'm still meeting with a number of persons to get a full assessment. If I speak, I will not be speaking with a full knowledge of everything yet, because a number of meetings are still to be had. However, in principle, our objective is to do what we have to make sure that the CBI survives and it continues to be viable, because it's important for national development.
The peace and the PAP, that was a major talking point during the election. What's the plan of the government? Are these programs going to continue under your administration?
As I've said before on the campaign trail, that we will better these programs where they can be bettered. So we will do that. We will not just end social programs like that. We are a responsible government. And therefore, I have met with a number of persons and continue to meet. But our aim, as we said, is to make these programs better, which we will do.
Another thing, of course, with a new government is the issue of witch hunt that tends to come up from time to time. Will your government be pursuing any witch hunts? I know there were a lot of things that you would have personally spoken about that you thought were corrupt practices from the previous administration, and you intend to look into those things. Will we be getting investigations? Will we be seeing persons?
I would say I'm not interested in witch hunts. I'm interested in knowing the truth about things. And that the truth is important to know. Because if you don't know the truth, you don't know where to start. You don't know where to begin. You don't know where you would go. For example, the peace program. The money goes from the Ministry of Finance and it goes to the Development Bank. And then one person in the Development Bank is handling that money to be distributed. The money is going down in some dark holes. That is finding out the truth. Because that is a critical program. And so in order to know the truth, you have to find out what exactly is taking place. So we are not interested in witch hunts. We are interested in knowing the truth.
Right. The legislative agenda. There has been a lot of talk from the previous government and even on the campaign trail about freedom of information and integrity in public life. How soon can we see some movement in that direction? I know freedom of information would have passed, but again, not actualized, same for integrity in public.
Right, so very critically, we're in the process of appointing our AG. And so in our discussions and my interviews, those were things that were mentioned also in the interviews. And I say, as I go, I'm still interviewing persons where I intend to continue to bring that matter up. Had an extensive discussion with one of the interviewee, maybe not the other one so much, but the other one, but I'll see them again. And that is coming up, and that is being discussed, because I think that the good governance agenda has to be looked at seriously.
So I take it that the AG will be someone who's appointed in a senator role, as opposed to someone from your current...
Right. It will be someone who will be appointed in a senator role. Right. You picked that up.
Regionally speaking, of course, you're a new prime minister. I take it you'll be engaging with your regional partners, the central bank, as well as the OACS pretty soon. What are some of the things that you're hoping to impart when you do get that opportunity to the rest of the region as prime minister of St. Kitts and Nevis?
Well, I really respect to the rest of the region. There are a number of things that I think we need to look at. But of course, to meet the fellow prime ministers, as a region, we need to look at the CBI program together. As a region, we need to look at the cost of fuel together as well to make sure that we do what we have to do, the cost of living across the region and what we can do really to deal with that. But I think the cost of fuel, we can definitely look at together and to see what can be done. Because if you look across the region, the issues seem to be the same in some major areas, the CBI, and the cost of living and the cost of fuel. I think those things need definitely to be looked at. So I'm going to be engaging them on those issues.
Right. And of course, LEAT is one of the major LEAT, inter-regional travel, right.
A tremendous challenge. And that too would be discussed. Because I had somebody said to me, Dr. G, better I go to Miami and come down than to try to get from Windward Islands to here.
and I take it LEAT will be a central discussion to that, because over the past we've heard, you know, questions about whether governments should invest and whether St. Kitts and Nevis should look to invest. So I take it that's something you'll be looking
at. Yeah, we'll be looking at that as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. Last but not least, constitutional reform and electoral reform.
Right.
Yes, I know on election day when you voted, the media would have spoken to you and asked you about changes and reforms, electronic voting, for example, and the whole aspect of the constituency boundaries. Those are things that are still, pending.
So with respect to the electoral reform, the boundaries, they have to be looked at. I mean, they're not even in keeping with having boundaries that are almost and near equal as is required by law. So, and there have been multiple attempts to change them, and I think that we should abide by the law. And I think that's something that will be looked at to make sure that by next elections, the boundaries would have been aligned in keeping with the requirements. So that will be looked at. Not only that, there are a number of electoral reform issues. We have to see how we can introduce the technology in voting so that it can be more efficient, quicker, the results can come quicker. I think we got the results fairly quickly
compared to
yes. And a number of things have been done, and a number of things can be done in terms of counting the vote where you voted. So instead of having all the boxes come to one spot, you can have the counting at the station, and then just report that can bring in your results very quickly as well. And so we need to look at a number of critical things like that. So we are going to look at those and see how they can be done. One of the things that we also look at was the ballot box, and to make sure that it's in keeping with the legislation. So we'll definitely pursue a number of those things. And then we'll get on to the Constitution as well. And that is why I'm having discussions with the AG, so that we can start looking at the whole legislative agenda. But if you look within our manifesto, you'll see there are a number of critical things that we will do. And our legislative agenda, how does it relate to the Nevis issue? To make sure once and for all, we start dealing critically with solving issues between our islands. And that has to be done from a legislative standpoint. And looking in the legislation as well, to take it a bit further, to see, you know, people's rights to education, people's rights to health care and so forth. Those things have to, when you look also at workers' rights, you know, you need, our workers fully protected? Do we need more legislation to make sure that workers' rights are protected? For example, during the COVID, when people were told if you don't take a vaccine, you'll be fired and so forth. I think now, you know, I mean, those things, I, you know, people know my own position. But even from a scientific standpoint, presently, there's no basis for anything like that. Even the policy that is held by the development, by the national group of companies with respect to vaccination and work and test. I remember writing a letter for one of my patients and said, okay, if you want the patient to test, can they test with a rapid antigen test? And they said no. And I said, scientifically, it is accepted. But they refused to pursue the PCR. And one of the questions I want answered is, was this a scientifically driven type of policy, or was this this policy had other motives? So those type of violations of people's rights, those are the kind of things I want to know the truth about. No witch hunt, but the truth is important.
Lastly, and before we let you go, Dr. Drew, you have a very wide agenda, very big agenda. Yes. Can you achieve all of this in one term?
I think we can achieve a lot of it. Why? God, they're practical. Already I told you 4 or 5 things I'm going to do this week that were big things on the campaign trail. Most of the things, or all of the things that I talked to on the campaign trail are things that I know are practical. I said to the country that they had an economic team looking at these things. And I was very serious about that. So when I said that we're going to deal with this or deal with that, those weren't things out of the air. For example, National Health Insurance. We already had a plan even before the government changed in 2015. So I know that when it comes to college and free tuition, we know we had a REACH program in 2015. When it came to the laptop program, we had a program like that. So if you look at the programs that I've mentioned, these are programs we had already or were ready to be implemented.
So based on your economic team's assessment, the current state, and I know you're still assessing the current state of the economy, but the current state of the country's finances can pay for all these things.
Can handle these things, yeah. We can make the necessary investments and handle it. And one of the things that's going to help a lot is when we cut out the corruption is going to save the country a lot of money. For example, the peace program, the money goes to Development Bank. I am told that the CEO of the Development Bank who issued the payment. After that, nobody else knows what happens to the money, right? And therefore, that will not be practiced here.
So there's a lot of fat that needs to be cut away.
Yes. A lot of fat, but not just the fat. A lot of the disappearance of the money needs to stop. And I think that would help the situation even. Yes.
Dr. Drew, thank you very much, Prime Minister, for taking some time out to speak to us on these various issues. And of course, we hope to be having further follow-ups in our too distant future.
I want to thank you very much. This is my first interview.
And we appreciate the fact that you gave us the first interview.
So we'll talk
some
more.
Thank you very much. That's Dr. Terence Drew, Prime Minister of St. Kitts and Nevis. We take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from Hartley Henry, the political strategist who offered his take with WPG10 on the program called The Narrative. He offered his take on the St. Kitts Nevis elections. That's coming up after the break.
Simply the best sound in Caribbean radio. This is VOC Radio.
Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis, a talk show and current affairs program focusing on St. Kitts and Nevis, the Caribbean, and international news. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, join host Andre Huey as he delves into topical issues of the day. We'll open the lines so you can call in and be part of the discussion. And he'll feature guests each week to help shed light on the various topics of discussion. Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis with Andre Huey, Tuesdays at 10 a.m., with rebroadcasts on Wednesdays and Fridays, also at 10 a.m., on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Also listen on our Android mobile app and TuneIn Radio. Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
I'm Making It Happen with Nicole Tyson, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. with a rebroadcast at 4 p.m. Get insightful information with interesting guests from the U.S. Virgin Islands, each and every week. I'm Making It Happen with Nicole Tyson, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
Nestled between evergreen mountains and the Caribbean Sea on the island of St. Kitts is the Millhouse Guesthouse and Convention Center. With breathtaking views, a rugged, beautiful shoreline, and immaculate manicured gardens, make this the perfect location for your holiday, event, or wedding. with a large convention center, apartments with balconies providing stunning views, and a secluded cottage for larger family groups or honeymooning couples looking for some privacy. We have something for everyone. Book your stay at www.millhousesknorocco.com or visit our Facebook page, the Mill House Guest House and Convention Center, an oasis of tranquility.
Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkus Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
The Entrepreneurial You. Wednesdays at 11 a.m. with a rebroadcast at 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio. Reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
For all your printing needs at top-notch quality, go to Digital Print Plus, located on Princess Street, Bastyr St. Kitts. At Digital Print Plus, you get the best in business cards, letterheads, envelopes, wristbands, tent cards, rack cards, flyers, brochures, logo designs, posters, photos, architectural designs, 3D renderings, and so much more. Digital Print Plus gives you the best quality at competitive prices. Contact us at 767-7468 or email digitalprintskn@gmail.com or follow us on Facebook at digitalprintskn. Digital Print Plus, for all your printing needs at the best quality.
You're listening to Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net.
Welcome back to Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis. Well, as I indicated to you, Mr. Hartley Henry, Caribbean political strategist, spoke to the program, the narrative from Grenada on the St. Kitts Nevis elections. He offered his take on why he thought the Labour Party won the election, what's next for PLP, the People's Labour Party, Dr. Timothy Harris, and the People's Action Movement, and their leader, Sean Richards.
Good to have you on. Now, you advise the St. Kitts and Nevis Labour Party. They are now the government. The rest is history, as they say. Would you say attributed to the victory?
Yeah, there were several factors that I think, on reflection, one can attribute. I think a lot had to do with our ability to anticipate. Once there was the collapse of the government, our worst fears were not realized, in that initially we thought we would have been faced with a 21-day election based on the dissolution of parliament. Now, from my perspective, that would have been a bit challenging for a party that would just have lost an election 2 years prior and would also have changed a 33-year standing leader just 5 months prior to that. The party was not as settled and organized as I would have liked. And therefore, when Parliament was dissolved, there was the concern that we may not have had enough time. But I think that on reflection, now the then Prime Minister was pretty generous to us, and he gave us over 3 months. And I think that was more than enough time to get ourselves organized, to settle down, to focus on the mission at hand. And I think that we succeeded in achieving our objective. So it's a combination of luck. It's a combination of errors on the part of the incumbent government. But it was also a pretty good team that we had. And the incoming Prime Minister, fortunately, was not someone who had tremendous baggage that we had to defend, explain, hide away, what have you. I think he was the perfect candidate going into a situation such as that.
Now, you talk about not having enough time, but the team unity was crumbling. I mean, the implosion went in slow motion. It went over a period of time, and Labour lost in 2015, and Dr. Denzel Douglas was, his leadership was one of the things that was attributed to the loss. So those factors were still an issue in the immediate lead up to the general elections, where you were concerned about how settled the party was.
Yes, because you would recall that it was just in December of 21, just 7-8 months ago, that there was a leadership challenge, and there was a conference to elect a new leader. And Dr. Drew would only have been elected in December of last year. So when the initial rumblings of the unity government intensified in the March-April period, you would have been speaking about a leader who would have been in office for less than 3 months. And that is where I think that we were a bit concerned at the time, because the footprints of Dr. Douglas would still have been very much prevalent and alive. And I think it would have been a credibility question of persuading persons that there were not internal strife and bickerings and what have you, and that the party was united and stable. Because I think with the collapse of a government, the last thing you want is instability in and an alternative option. And as I said, the extra time given the Labour Party proved quite correct and quite useful in them being able to address that issue, as well as solidify themselves in the minds of the people, of the public, as a government worthy of their consideration.
No, the promise of stability and the issue of stability, how great a role did it play in the results?
I think very much so, because we did some polling, and that was one of the major issues. Two of the things we learned from our analysis, both the scientific polling and the focus groups, is that persons were not minded to go the route of a coalition, of an alliance, of groupings again, because their experience from this last one were not the best. And obviously, if a team unity or a unity government fails, then what else can work? Because the very essence of the collaboration of those three parties were that they could have unified and brought some stability to the country. So we tested, and even though we did not wish to become overbearing or to become arrogant in our demand for all 8 seats, we certainly campaign on the basis of we needed a clear majority. We needed a majority government. We needed a clear majority on St. Kitts. Because as you would recall, Nevis also had 3 seats, and our intelligence was telling us that the CCM would have won all 3 Nevis seats, which would have meant out if we had fallen short of the minimum 6 seats in St. Kitts, then there would have been another coalition entity. And that we got the impression the public was not particularly excited about. So our campaign was, we were hoping to win all 8, but we really wanted to take it, we wanted to reach the 6 figure first. And in the last week or so, that's where perhaps I think the leader in particular was able to heed the advice, and we put our energies in the 2 seats that we thought were number 5 and 6 coming in. And I think it worked perfect for us.
Dr. Drew, it's not his first time at bat. He's won a seat now. What focus did you put there? Obviously, you have to put most of your focus there. He's the leader.
Yeah.
In Caribbean politics, you do that. Mm-hmm. How difficult was it to ensure that the leader of the party?
I think for one, all in a small country, a constituency which would never have produced a prime minister before, that meant the world of difference to many voters. You are voting not only for a representative, not only for someone who's likely to be on the winning side or on the government side in parliament, but you are voting for the prime minister. If Labour wins, Dr. Drew will be the prime minister. That meant the world to residents of that community. Plus, also, you would recall that constituency had been a stronghold of the opposition People's Action Movement for many years. And with the outgoing member of parliament essentially distancing himself from PAM in that campaign, we anticipated and we essentially more or less hoped that the base of PAM would not have come out. And in our canvassing of the constituency, we recognized that if we went easy on PAM, if we did not become abusive to the outgoing member, if we would give him the respect that was due, we felt that his supporters would either have remained at home or supported us quietly. And that is why we never kind of sought to have a show of strength in the constituency. We were confident we would have won it, but I think we wanted to do a level of shock and awe in terms of giving the PAM the view that it could continue to treat it as a stronghold. But we knew that Dr. Drew was making serious inroads. And I think that our climax activities, where you saw I would have engineered for two of our three last events to be held in constituency, that is when I wanted to left no stone unturned and to send a clear message, you know, that Dr. Drew is winning, and he's winning big. And therefore, you have a chance of having the next prime minister within the next 48 hours. And I think that went very well with the electorate and the embrace that I did.
So the initial strategy was we come in peace.
Yeah, yes. Because you have to respect the rights of person. And the outgoing MP would have been a three-term member. So if a person has won a seat 15 years, three elections, he must be loved by some people. He must have done some good. And I think strategically, you don't get between an individual and the constituents, or the constituents and their preferred and their representative. I think it was a case of getting them to agree that their party, it was not their party's finest hour, and that we paid due deference and respect to the outgoing MP. But the party really was not what the same as it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I think the non-offensive route, I think sometimes is very effective in Caribbean politics. And you can cut a head off without drawing a dagger. There are different ways to get the job done. And we felt that we needed to just give the outgoing MP a nice send-off, a nice gentleman. Unfortunately, his party has technically fallen below the required standard, and therefore they're not worthy to be considered again.
Now, you mentioned earlier some of the mistakes of the incumbent, the then incumbent, and Peter Wickham, who's also on this edition of my program, he going into the elections felt that the PLP could be quite the challenger. Now we see Dr. Harris, former Prime Minister, winning his seat, but the margin has fallen greatly from 80-something percent to down to 50% in this election. What are some of those mistakes that you capitalized on?
Yeah, I think one of them had to do with the timing. I honestly believe that Dr. Harris overplayed his hand. In that, there's no place in politics, or certainly in the wrap-up stage of a term of a tenure of a government and the calling of the election, there's not a point for idling. If you have something to do that will take you time to do, then you can, of course, draw it out a bit because you know you're going to finish with a bang. But you do not get on the track and just limber up for, you know, for 5, 10, 15 minutes before you begin to run. And I think that Dr. Harris may have captured the imagination and the attention of voters at the point at which he fired his colleagues and dissolved the parliament. I think that was a very astute political move. I admired it, I thought at the time he was going to be problematic for us. He then immediately followed up about 3-4 days later with a very, very attractive package of measures which address all sectors of the country. And particularly, you would recall that this in the throes of COVID and with the closing of the winter season, there was some emergent hardships in the country. There were persons who were beginning to be laid off. You had escalating fuel prices. You have the whole question of the global food supply. You have the issues of many of the migrants who had come to St. Kitts and who were not finding employment. And his policies, as enunciated within 84 hours of the dissolution of Parliament, I felt hit the nail on the head. So at that point, and that is about the same point at which I thought Mr. Peter Wickham and Cadres did their poll, at that point, I felt he was threatening because he was doing the right things. He was showing that he had the strength of character, the will, the courage to to do a few things, and I felt at that time he was a particular threat to us, especially if he had gone presidential, because if you are doing the right things as the leader, then my view strategically at that time, if I had an opportunity to whisper into his ear, I would have told him to go presidential and not to seek to delay the process by perfecting a team, because there's still no team that you can go around and find and have assembled and be ready seriously for an election within 60 days. So I felt that he made a fundamental error in terms of dragging the process out. I think having given, quote unquote, all of his goodies up front, the next 75 or so days, the average person knew that the economy was not in the strongest shape. You're not seeing any tourist visitors arriving. St. Kitts and Nevis still have some of the most punitive measures in terms of COVID, whereby you still have, at that time, it was still tests required. You still have to get permission from the Ministry of Health to enter the country, even if you are vaccinated, even if you have a negative PCR test. So there was not a climate for tourism. Agriculture was not was trailing, and really at that time, just hanging around to ready your team, I think, was a fundamental error. And therefore, while initially I thought Mr. Wickham's poll was bang on, and it was, I did manage to get a glimpse of that, and that was very useful in helping us to plan, because we knew that PLP had captured the imagination of the public. But I think with the passage of time, that too passed, and we were able then to sustain the lead that we had and hold on to it.
And that will do it for this edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis right here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Remember, you can listen to this program once again, our rebroadcast on Wednesday and Friday at 10 a.m. You can also listen to the program on demand. Visit our website, www.voiceofthecaribbean.net, and click on the on-demand section. It will take you to all our shows that we've done right here on this program, Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis, and the most recent one you'll be able to listen to. Thanks again for listening to Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis, and stay tuned to Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond. I was your host, Andre Huey. Have a great day.
The best sound in Caribbean radio. This is VOC Radio.
Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis, a talk show and current affairs program focusing on St. Kitts and Nevis, the Caribbean, and international news. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, join host Andre Huey as he delves into topical issues of the day. We'll open the lines so you can call in and be part of the discussion. And he'll feature guests each week to help shed light on the various topics of discussion. Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis with Andre Huey, Tuesdays at 10 a.m., with rebroadcasts on Wednesdays and Fridays, also at 10 a.m., on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Also listen on our Android mobile app and TuneIn Radio, Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
I'm Making It Happen with Nicole Tyson, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. with a rebroadcast at 4 p.m. Get insightful information with interesting guests from the U.S. Virgin Islands, each and every week. I'm Making It Happen with Nicole Tyson, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
Nestled between evergreen mountains and the Caribbean Sea on the island of St. Kitts is the Millhouse Guesthouse and Convention Center. With breathtaking views, a rugged, beautiful shoreline, and immaculate manicured gardens, make this the perfect location for your holiday, event, or wedding. With a large convention center, apartments with balconies providing stunning views, and a secluded cottage for larger family groups or honeymooning couples looking for some privacy, we have something for everyone. Book your stay at www.millhousesknn.com or visit our Facebook page, the Millhouse Guesthouse and Convention Center. an oasis of tranquility.
Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkiss Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
The Entrepreneurial You. Wednesdays at 11 a.m. with a rebroadcast at 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio. Reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
For all your printing needs at top-notch quality, go to Digital Print Plus, located on Princess Street, Bastyr's in Kits. At Digital Print Plus, you get the best in business cards, letterheads, envelopes, wristbands, tent cards, rack cards, flyers, brochures, logo designs, posters, photos, architectural designs, 3D renderings, and so much more. Digital Print Plus gives you the best quality at competitive prices. Contact us at 767-7468 or email digitalprintskn@gmail.com or follow us on Facebook at digitalprintskn. Digital Print Plus, for all your printing needs at the best quality.
You're listening to Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net.